The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the social studio.
You found the Radio Today programme, the weekly podcast from Radio Today. I'm Trevor Dan and I'm in Weston House in the BBC's West One sort of annex next door to New Broadcasting House. And I've come here because the BBC Asian Network is celebrating 50 years of broadcasting by the BBC to the British Asian community. And we thought we'd come along and talk to the Asian Network's head of programmes, who is Mark Stripple. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Trevor.
First thing we're all going to notice about you is you're not Asian.
That is absolutely true, as you've noted.
However, you have a long history of working with Asian musicians.
Yeah, I mean, going back, I turned 40 a couple of years ago, so reasonably young, but I've been in the Asian music scene and the industry, I suppose, since about 1990, so 25 years or thereabouts, and through a range of roles, really, community radio stations. So I cut my teeth in community radio in Asian sense, so stations like Punjab Radio, there's a national digital network.
And why was that? What was the first sort of motivation for you to get involved in the Asian music scene?
It was just where I grew up. So I went to school in West London, Hounslow. Hounslow and South were predominantly Asian areas. So for me, school, my reality in the 70s and 80s was a school that was 60, 70% Asian. And yes, it was a multicultural area, but my school was pretty much just Asian and white, actually. It was a real demarcation of the type you probably don't see in many areas now. But that was my upbringing. So that was my perspective. And I got to know Asian music and the cultural sensitivities, the audience, the media marketplace. I got a good sense of the nation in terms of where the Asian audiences are, where they're based, what they're interested in. I was a DJ as well in the industry, so at school and college, and then on to university, I spent time mixing and fusing Asian records with hip-hop, urban, dance beats. Clearly, I was the only white person doing that in my area, but I had a sense of credibility and endorsement, I suppose, because I came from an Asian area. I wasn't coming in from the outside and trying to, as a cultural tourist, I was from the scene and then delivering music for that scene. So I'm in a range of different roles, club promoter, community radio broadcaster, had my serious career in terms of law and history. So academia on one side, creative content, music, late night sessions in radio stations on the other. That led me through to music as a more consistent career. So I jumped out of law into digital downloads, had an internet startup, raised some venture capital for an early iTunes type model that didn't quite work. I ran some with boo.com and lastminute.com when the bubble burst, and then jumped from there into Def Jam UK as a music producer, a group called the Punjabi Hit Squad that we set up.
You had hits, didn't you?
We had some hits, yeah. We produced a remix for Mariah Carey, Dizzy Rascal, Sway, who was a reasonably well-known rapper, Beanie Man, and then joined One Extra from launch as a presenter.
So you came to the BBC initially as, dare I say it, a disc jockey.
As talent.
As talent.
As we say now, yeah.
Now, crossing the floor has always been very difficult for the DJ, hasn't it, within these hallowed walls?
It has been, and I was behind the microphone for 6, 7 years on One Extra, so it took a period of time. But at the same time, I was producing radio programs. We had a small syndication outfit, so we produce a Saturday night radio program for broadcast on Dutch radio throughout that 2 or 3 year period. And on community radio, of course, you are your own producer and presenter. You see it from both sides. So making that jump across, Bob Shannon gave my first job at the BBC in 2006. So it was an Asian network that by then had been in existence as a national digital network for 4 years. Bob came in, gave it some renewed focus. I came in as part of a new team. Michael Hill was obviously very involved at that time as well, UK radio player and other people. And I made that jump from being a presenter on One Extra and Asian Network at that time. So my love and support for British Asian music, which there are many artists, and Bhangra music, had also led me to present on that station. And I made the jump across.
So when you first arrived, you were head of music. Let's just drill down for a minute and discuss what being head of music for the Asian Network actually means. You know, I mean, first of all, I suppose we could talk for hours about what exactly we mean by an Asian in this context, but yeah. How do you square all the different demands for what constitutes, you know, an ethnic Asian sound?
I mean, it's always a complex challenge, But it's a challenge that we understand and can meet because we understand the complexities and sensitivities of this audience. And you're absolutely right. I mean, if you're talking about the Asian network or the Asian community, it's a multifaceted, multi-layered community of people from different ethnic backgrounds, but also quite often from shared ethnic backgrounds with shared languages and commonality of culture, faith, celebration, religion, sport, food, music and entertainment, social issues that combine audiences together, whether you're a British Tamil or a British Punjabi or a Pakistani from Punjab or a Pakistani from Karachi in your background. And remember, we're talking here about an audience that whose grandparents and parents came from South Asia. You know, we're talking about a community that's 4 million strong, that's young, you know, 1 in 10, 18 to 34 year olds now in Britain today are from an Asian background. You know, that's a huge statistic.
And are all those different backgrounds that you've talked about anxious to get on with each other? I mean, do they share a background in terms of the subcontinent, but what about their tastes in, you know, modern music?
Yeah, I mean, there's a shared love for commonality of culture. And of course, there isn't one uniform British Asian outlook on music or culture or life. And that's what makes this audience so fascinating, challenging, exciting, but really important to modern Britain, you know, if you look at the demographics. But we navigate our way through those moments with a real sense of understanding and knowledge and experience, you know, whether that's our Nihal programs. If you look at the schedule on the Asian network, you know, it follows the form of a schedule you will get on any other radio station. We have a breakfast show, Tommy Sandu, massive openness of tone. If you're not Asian, we're so open, and it's not a silo-based program. You will find access points, and it will help you to navigate your way around Asian content. The Nihal program is our morning phone-in program. And on there, actually, it's worth, anyone who's listening to this now should really tune in from 10 till 1. You will hear a range of unique voices that you will never hear anywhere else on any phone-in, whether it's the BBC or further beyond. And you will hear young Asians talking about issues around Syria or IS or cultural identity, if you're a Sikh or a Muslim or a Hindu, in an authentic way that you wouldn't hear on any other part of the portfolio or elsewhere.
So I see that as being your role within the greater BBC family, that you're providing some programming which would attract an audience which otherwise might feel alienated from the rest of the BBC. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. I think it's an accurate description of our core mission. The fact is we bring in a unique reach. So 50% of our audience are unique to BBC Radio. It's an audience that's growing as well. If you look at the demographics again, looking back to the audience case for Asian Network, and all of this has to be audience-led, it's grown. The audience has grown by the potential audience has grown by more than a million in 10 years since the 2001 census. Asian Network delivers in three key areas for the BBC as well, in that we bring in a BAME audience. More than 90% of our listenership are Asian. We have a young demographic. We serve a young demographic, and we have a young audience. So that's a big key for the BBC in terms of meeting that challenge. And also a very working-class audience. So at least half of our audience are, and you know, I hate the descriptions of socioeconomic classes, but a C2DE.
Can I ask you, how much do you, as the head of programmes, think about the commercial opposition? Because there are a number of ethnic stations, many of which don't, of course, broadcast as much English language programming as you do.
I think we see ourselves, and we are wholly distinctive from the commercial Asian radio sector. It is a vibrant sector, and we want the broader ecosystem for Asian audiences to be as rich and layered as possible. And you've got Sunrise Radio, Leica, other key players. I mean, some of those I've worked with, and I've worked with Sunrise in the past, and I've worked with Punjab Radio that I've mentioned. There are a few key areas where I say that we're distinctive. Our music policy is wholly distinctive. You know, we have a core UK commitment to supporting British Asian music in our playlists. New music is a cornerstone of what we do around our music policy.
Are you saying that some of the commercial stations would play more music that actually comes from the subcontinent?
Exactly that. So if you compared Asian Network to most of the other commercial Asian radio stations, in fact, predominantly the majority of stations, you would say, the content would be almost exclusively South Asian in its orientation. It's the same with television as well. If you scan across Sky or Virgin Media, you will come across a whole range of, and it didn't used to be the case, but there's massive plurality in services and offerings now from India or Pakistan or Bangladesh. And of course, that's imported content. There's not a great deal of production that's homegrown from Britain. So in terms of support for UK artists, that's a defining factor for the Asian Network. In terms of the journalistic mission that we have in our phone-in programmes and our two half-hourly Asian Network reports and the documentaries that we deliver that then quite often don't just play on the Asian Network but play on Radio 4 or the World Service or Victoria Derbyshire, we have collaborations on a regular basis. Collaborations with comedy, those are all distinctive features of the Asian Network.
I wish, this is a personal point, that the BBC did more of that. I wonder why there's not as much programme making by your team that is heard elsewhere in the BBC. Is that an ambition of yours?
Well, it's an ambition we've had for the last few years, and it's changing and evolving. I'll give you a good example, actually, of BBC comedy. So there's a young comedian called Guz Khan, he's from Coventry, had his first stand-up gig for the Asian Network in January of this year at Birmingham City Library. We put that on iPlayer and Red Button. It reached more than 500,000 viewers. So a great story for BBC comedy there, the Asian Network and Birmingham as well. He then was part of an iPlayer commission that we had where we gave him a comedy short. When we looked at the top 20 most viewed on iPlayer, I think it was about number 10 for a few weeks as well, ahead of some of the big properties on BBC television. So his star has risen as a result of being associated with the Asian Network, seeing us as a core primary platform first. He's now looking at broader BBC commissions with BBC Comedy. He now has a new show on the Asian Network launching at the end of November next year. So there is that pathway and that journey which comes about by Asian Network helping to act as a creative incubator, if you like, for British Asian talent, but they're not keeping them within the walls of the Asian Network, but ensuring that we connect them with the wider BBC.
And to what extent, Mark, do your bosses ask you to deliver some of your audience to other BBC channels and networks?
It's part of our mission. You know, I spoke about our unique reach being 50%, which is a real positive for the Asian Network. We bring in a unique audience, and that's great, but we do want our audience to discover and come across other areas of interest on Radio 4 or Radio 2. We do that in different ways. Bob's really keen on doing this. Helen's really keen that we collaborate and connect as much as possible, whether it was our Joe Wiley, Bobby Friction simulcast a few weeks ago that exposes a Radio 2 audience as well to young British Asian artists. People like Anushka Shankar as well, so sitar strumming on the piazza outside MBH, or whether it's Chris Evans and Tommy having a simulcast moment on the day of Eid, which says something to Radio 2's Muslim audience and Asian audience and non, you know, BAME audiences who already tune into Radio 2. It says something about the tonality of our networks. It says something about the relevance of what we're doing, that we, of course, if you're a national broadcaster, you're speaking to all kinds of audiences. There are Asian audiences who, well, clearly they don't just listen to the Asian Network. You know, they've one extra's in their listening mix, or commercial broadcasters, Kiss 100 or Radio 2 or Radio 1. There are massive overlaps, and we certainly don't pretend that our audience just listen to Asian Network.
Over the years that the Asian Network has been going, you've had bases in Leicester, then you were wholly based in Birmingham for a while, then you were moved down here, you lost a lot of staff, you were going to be closed down at one point, that was one of the proposals. How does it work now for you to have a London base? I mean, it feels in some sense that it must be some strength, isn't it, to be next door or in the same building as 2 and 6 Music. Is that a good thing?
Yes, I mean, so Asian Network over time, you're right, historically kind of emerged from the Midlands. It was a collection of local radio Asian programming, BBC Birmingham, BBC, I think Leicester came first in the 70s, and then the Midlands, and so the Midlands was the heartland for the Asian Network. We still have two sites, really, so we have half of our programming, 60% now from London, from MBH, alongside, on the 8th floor, alongside 101 Extra, but as part of the two Radio 2 and 6 Music family. And then 40% of our programming from the mailbox in Birmingham. So really central to the BBC Birmingham production story and in that building, working alongside WM. So we have a foothold in two cities. That works out really well for us because it's two massive concentrations of the British Asian community. So Birmingham and the West Mids, but also Leicester, Derby, areas like Normanton in Derby and Nottingham not being so far away. We can connect outwards. And, of course, looking up to the north as well. So we also have reporters, regional reporters in each of those areas, in the East Midlands, Bradford and those areas as well. So it works out really well for the Asian Network to be closer to their network peers, to be alongside other networks. There's real benefits for that in terms of staff mobility as well, that we don't want specialist British Asian staff working for the Asian Network should work in other parts of the BBC empire, and they do. not just radio or TV, but beyond. That's a really positive story. I think it certainly helps us in terms of having that presence and profile and foothold in two key centres. And in fact, I mean, you spoke about 3 years ago with the Asian Network being penciled in for potential closure. And we've changed a lot in that time. We've refocused the network. We had a massive restructure in 2012. We reduced our budget by close to 50% and our headcount as well. The fact is we were broadcasting from about five different centres at that time as well. So we had Leicester, the Mailbox, Yalding House in London, Television Centre in Hull, broadcast from, and Western House. So we've actually simplified the Asian Network, if you like, in terms of where we broadcast from.
I think you've got a bit younger, haven't you? Is that fair?
I think we're in the process right now of sharpening our focus on our younger audiences. 18 to 34-year-olds is our service license core target audience. I think that's in response, really, to the changing demographics. I mentioned earlier that 1 in 10 18 to 34-year-olds in Britain, that's a totality of everybody, as British Asian. 70% of London has been British Asian. That's, you know, those statistics tell a story about our audience, an audience that's young, the demographic that's young, that's growing, and we're responding to that in different ways. One way is with some schedule changes later this year as well. So I mentioned Guz Khan, people like Mim Sheikh we've got coming in, who's joining the network. He's already had an outing on the network as a contributor, but is now depping on One Extra. Yasser in the past is part of that change. He joined the network 3 years ago and is covering for Gemma Kearney on Radio 1. So that pipeline of new talent coming from the Asian Network, working in other parts of radio, is changing and moving. But yes, I think it's accurate to say that we are sharpening our focus on younger audiences.
Well, it's been great meeting you. And thank you very much for spending some time with the Radio Today programme.
Thank you very much.
And here's to another 50 years.
Thank you, Trevor. Thanks very much. Thank you.
That's Mark Strippel. We're at Western House in London West 1, and we're going to have some news now from Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Thank you, Trevor. This week, Sunset Radio has returned to Manchester. It's not been around for over 20 years, but Mike Shaft has brought it back, and you can now hear it on DAB in Manchester and online. UTV has started a major recruitment campaign for staff to work at three of its new radio stations, launching nationally in 2016. If you want to work there, maybe for Virgin Radio, then now is your time to apply. And entries are now open for the Hospital Radio Awards 2016. Details on how to enter are on our website, and the closing date is November 15th. The awards are given out in Watford next March. Good luck if you're applying. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Now, some broadcasters really do deserve a birthday mention.
Clement Freud, it is your turn to talk this time for 60 seconds on The English Nanny, starting now.
The English Nanny is a great institution for love.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but around the world.
Happy birthday, Nicholas Parsons. He's 92 and still on air, and there he was in his 90s and in his 50s. And whilst we're dealing with radio royalty, a debut 75 years ago for what became a familiar voice.
Today, Princess Elizabeth is herself to take part in the Children's Hour and speak to the children of the Empire at home and overseas.
In wishing you all good evening, I feel that I am speaking to friends and companions who have shared with my sister and myself many a happy children's hour.
Her Majesty the Queen, then a 14-year-old princess, on air for the first time this week in 1940. But what happened to her? What happened to her sister?
My sister is by my side.
Oh, okay.
And we are both going to say good night to you.
Oh.
Come on, Margaret.
Come on, Margaret.
Good night, children. Good night, and good luck to you all.
Good night, And after that broadcast, which everybody heard, of course, apparently, "Come on, Margaret," became a catchphrase for children across the United Kingdom.
Come on, Margaret.
Brilliant stuff. And if anyone ever says that delivery and language don't change over the years, just listen to that. This week, last year, radio got a surprise new princess, and Five Live broke the story.
He's already halfway through gender reassignment treatment, and this week has changed his name to Stephanie. This is his first interview where Simon has been addressed as Stephanie. So why tell the world now?
Because I got to a point in my life where I had to stop doing what I was doing to have some time out to focus on me, because I've devoted my entire life to radio. And
from what age?
I knew that I wanted to be on the radio from about eight or nine.
Stephanie Hurst making that big announcement this week in 2014, and what a year it's been for her, and a great 40th birthday party the other weekend. Another 40th birthday too for commercial radio this week, for the 15th station in what was the Independent Local Radio Network.
For the very first time in the south of England, with the time just gone 1 o'clock, on Tuesday, October 14th, 1975, on 257 metres medium wave and 95 megahertz VHF in stereo, this is Radio Victory.
We've had a message from the police at Southsea to say that a lady has found a pregnant Siamese cat in her backyard. It may well be that somebody called us earlier to announce that they'd lost their cat. If so, if they'd like to give the lady a call on Portsmouth 35059, she has a pregnant Siamese cat in her backyard. Portsmouth 35059. Thank you very much, madam.
How many years is it since we called listeners madam and read out their phone numbers too? Radio Victory launching in Portsmouth this week in 1975. Its license wasn't renewed 10 years later and the station closed. 2 years before that launch came commercial radio's first music station.
The date is October the 16th, 1973. The time, 5 a.m.
And the reason why Capital still owns London, despite everyone else scrabbling around in the dust, is because Capital puts back into its audience what it takes out. It still does Help a London Child. They raise £1 million a time. You know, it still does Flat Share. It still does the Job Finder things. It does all of those things that make it a service for the people. It does good news, great sport. I mean, that's a full-service radio station, and I still think a great full-service radio station knocks spots off any narrowcaster.
Good morning. Good morning. This, for the very first time, is Capital Radio.
The first programme director, Michael Bucht, speaking in 1998 about Capital, the station he launched this week 42 years ago. Astute followers of Radio Moments may argue that commercial radio was around in Britain many years before that, and in a sense it was. This week in 1931, the IBC, Radio Normandy, made its first transmission to Britain.
This is Radio Normandy broadcasting on its new wavelength of 274 metres.
Here is a very interesting announcement for everyone, more especially for our lady listeners. Greenest Cream is made from the finest and purest vegetable materials obtainable.
Radio Normandy, which first broadcast to our shores 84 years ago, and along with Radio Luxembourg, became much listened to here at some of our earliest commercial radio. It's 5 years this week since Chris Evans told Richard Bacon that he thought Chris Moyles was too old for Radio 1 Breakfast.
Chris has got to go somewhere else next year because he's it's time for him to leave, isn't it?
I would say.
I think so.
Why?
Yeah.
Why is it time for him to leave?
Well, because he's the tenure is he's broken all the records. He's been the longest ever serving DJ on Radio 1, I think. I think he broke Tony Blackburn's record last year. I think that he's way out of the demographic already of the listenership.
Radio 1 Breakfast had 16 presenters in all. The shortest official tenancy came to an end this week, 18 years ago.
Anyway, it says, will today's show be on Listen Again in case we miss it? I don't think so.
No.
Friday's
not very
be.
Good. I mean, this first bit's been all right, but the next hour and 20 minutes, rotten.
Probably.
Mark and Lard, who ended their time on Radio 1 Breakfast after just 8 months this week in 1997. Some station names didn't last too long either. One of those was Wiltshire Radio.
Scott Joplin's The Entertainer, as performed by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra on behalf of Wiltshire Radio. It's a double A-side record. On the other A-side, if you see what I mean, is the Wiltshire Radio theme, which if you get up extremely early in the morning or you listen to us at 10 o'clock at night, you'll hear us play to open and close the station. If you'd like to buy that record, cost you just £1, rather less than your average single.
The launch of Wiltshire Radio this week in 82. It became GWR 4 years later. So, with the first Saga station coming on air 14 years ago...
We'll be playing melodic popular records from the 40s to the present day.
Chiltern Radio launching from Dunstable 34 years ago, now Hart.
From today on, you're going to hear the very best in broadcasting in Hertfordshire, Bedfordshire and Buckinghamshire.
Any questions beginning 67 years ago from Winchester?
Do you consider that we shall ever again be able to go to the butcher and grocer and order what quantity and kind of meat and fats we require?
Lovely Island FM launching in Guernsey 23 years ago.
We're now going live to our reception where Deputy Valerie Renner, President of the Broadcasting Committee, will officially open the station by unveiling a plaque.
The song Je T'aime, banned by most stations 46 years ago. And with Digital One, awarded the first national DAB multiplex license 17 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! Thank you, David Lloyd, Roy Martin, and of course, Mark Stripple. Next time, I'll bring you some highlights from the Word in Your Ear event celebrating John Peel. So please join me for that. This has been a TDC production.
Come on, Margaret.
Ta-da.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.